Yuri, welcome to the Roadmap Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Yuri, I want to start with a difficult and somewhat sensitive question. Anecdotally, if we look at most cycling clubs, there is a large chunk of athletes who are carrying excess body weight. How does somebody who's training so many hours and burning through so many kilojoules end up putting on weight?
That's a great question. Two things that I think about there when this comes into play is, number one, you know, a lot of us as a baseline have a fairly sedentary lifestyle. You know, we might be sitting for work for most of the day, and then it's that we get up and we go and do our ride, or we go and do our ride and then we sit for the rest of the day. So it's very much on or off, which is an interesting thing to manage when it comes to nutrition and your nutritional needs and your carbohydrate intake, or decreasing your carbohydrate intake and everything that comes along with that. The other thing to consider that I see over and over again, I would say with most of my clients, is that people are not eating enough. So there's this whole idea that, you know, okay, in order to weigh less, in order to be more fit, more lean, I need to eat less calories. That's just, it's not that simple, unfortunately. Unfortunately or fortunately, you know, depending on how you look at it, right? Like, I'm sure that so many people listening here will be like, oh, I just tried to cut calories and exercise more, but I didn't lose weight. And that's because our bodies are smarter than that, simply put, really. You know, if we are not eating enough calories and we are training at, you know, a lot, like you're giving this example of these people, our body's going to adapt. It's going to take our metabolism from this, like, nicely functioning, burning food and calories as fuel and energy to down here, kind of just barely holding on. And it's going to tend to hold on to more calories as fat and store it because it doesn't know when it's going to get enough calories this afternoon or that evening or the next day or not. So a lot of people I find are in this, like, they're in too much of a calorie deficit. They're not getting enough calories consistently enough to meet the demands of their training. And their metabolism is responding to that. So when they do eat calories, high carbohydrate calories and all that kind of stuff, no matter if they're exercising or not, their body tends to hold on to it because it doesn't know when it's going to get what it needs next time. And that can be a really damaging place to be and a challenging place to be for people who want to lose weight.
I know listeners already, their heads are spinning because they're like, on the one end, they're not moving enough and they're sedentary and that's why they're putting on weight. But on the other end, now they're not eating enough calories. These seem like contradictory. It seems like almost, what was George Orwell's phrase, double think for this type of thing. So maybe to start off this conversation, let's lay some foundational principles of weight loss to help us understand that. Is it as simple as calories in, calories out? Is there a thermodynamic effect or is there another variable here that I'm missing?
I will say this. It's not necessarily that they're not active enough. You know, they can be active enough. They're exercising on a regular basis, moving their bodies on a regular basis, but they then just also have that baseline of oftentimes a sedentary job. That is one thing, but that's not really the biggest thing here. The biggest thing here is that they're not eating the right calories at the right times to support their body being able to burn calories as fuel and energy rather than be predisposed to store them. That's the biggest thing. So, you know, the way that I look at this is, you know, yes, it's not about just calories in, calories out. It's about giving your body the calories it needs when it needs them to burn them as fuel to support performance, but also knowing that, hey, my calorie needs on a Thursday and Friday may not be the same as my calorie needs on a Saturday and Sunday when I have multiple hours on the bike. I've got a big weekend ride with the group or a race or something like that. So, you know, the thing to think about here comes from the fact that none of our days, most of the time, are the same. So what comes into play here is that it's really important for people to understand how to tweak their calorie intake based on the variability of their days, whether they're sitting at their desk all day or sitting in their saddle all day. That's really where the key happens here, where sometimes we have the capacity to skimp on calories a little bit because it's not going to negatively impact our performance, make us bonk halfway through our ride, or make us like limp back to our house after a long ride because we could barely hold on for the final third of the ride. you know, there's times that that's really important to pay attention to. There's other times where it's like, hey, you know, travel day, mellow day, recovery week. So we've got to look at the variability here rather than looking at this blanket statement. These are my calorie goals. This is my meal plan. Here's what I should go with no matter what my day brings.
Yeah. So those reductionist arguments just don't work in something as complex, it seems, as nutrition.
Exactly.
So let me give you a walkthrough of how I would coach an athlete when they come in the door. So as soon as an athlete comes in the door, I really want to know two things as early as I can. I want to know, firstly, where are they at? And that's baseline physiological testing for me. That's a line in the sand to say, here's our current 10 second, 1 minute, 5 minute, 20 minute powers. Mm-hmm. If I have access to lab data and I can look at stuff like LT1, LT2, brilliant. And I'll collectively call that a where we're at. Now, the second thing I want to know, much like a car wants to know GPS-wise, if you get into it and you want to plot a journey, it needs to know where you are, your baseline testing, and it needs to know your destination, your goal. Once I know where they are and where they're going, then I can start to plan out the journey. I can start to figure out how we put macro and micro plans together to get them to where they want to go. If I walk in the door to you and I'm saying, I'm living a pretty sedentary lifestyle, I'm riding my bike 10 to 12 hours a week, I'm carrying a little bit of extra weight, talk me through your process.
Yeah. I love that you frame that up with that, because that's really the way that we look at it too with nutrition. Is the way that we start out with a new client before we get on the first call with them is we have them log their food, but not just their food. We have them log their food with timestamps and approximate serving sizes, in addition to what they did that day, in addition to how they felt that day. So we want to know, hey, you know, what did your day look like today? Was it a day where you got up and you did an early morning workout and then you sat at your desk for the rest of the day? And at what times did you eat? Did you eat every 3 hours, or did you go 6 hours without eating something? And then you got to dinner and you were starving, so you ate way more than you wanted to. And then how did that make you feel? And then we can start to recognize, okay, you know, also, how did you feel during your effort? How does that correlate to what your day looked like in terms of food? How was your stress level today? How was your sleep last night? How was your gut? How was your GI? All this kind of baseline stuff. We want to understand what's your baseline with this food, activity, and feels log. And then exactly like what you're saying here, Anthony, is we want to understand what are your goals. So for example, I'll have somebody that comes and they're just like, you know, I feel like by the time I get to about Thursday in my week, I'm just totally done. I can't show up for my workouts anymore. I'm exhausted. I'm getting cravings in the evening. I feel like I'm eating way more than I want to in the second half of the day because I'm just starving. So with that person, we'd look at, okay, what are the top priority actionables? What are the things that we can insert throughout your day to make sure you're getting the calories you need when you need it, so that it doesn't overflow into overeating or having a bunch of cravings where you have to rely on willpower for the second half of the day or going into the evening? Or, hey, this day you went 6 hours without eating. It's totally fair that you're starving when dinner comes around at 5:30. What do we need to do to that so we can make sure that you actually have a reasonable approach to dinner where you're not at the mercy of just hanger, really? So we kind of then adjust from there. We make small changes over an extended period of time from there based on their long-term goals.
So how are we determining baseline calories? Because you've talked about different levels of efficiency in someone's metabolism. Maybe someone's metabolism is not firing as vigorously as it should because they're depriving themselves of calories. How are we assessing this and determining a baseline of calories?
Yeah, so we're looking at, we're calculating their resting energy expenditure based on their age, their height, their weight, and their sex. And then we're looking at activity factors on top of that based on their training load and based on the variability there. Then what we look at is we kind of look at the day-to-day, because like I was saying before, that's not going to be the same, right? You know, the day that you have a 60-minute recovery ride is going to be very different than the day that you have a 2.5, 3-hour or more group ride effort or a race or something like that on the weekend. So we take this kind of baseline to maintain their needs, support their metabolism, and those kind of details. And then we always say, hey, know that this is your baseline, but this will increase based on the variability of your days and the workouts. And then it's our job to teach our clients how to adjust and adapt. Typically, the additional calories that are added to their baseline are the the food that they're eating right before, during, and right after their workouts. We also have to consider where the client is at in the moment. So if they're typically, what I see is they're way below their calories. So say they're, you know, eating 1500 calories for an easy example, but their calorie needs are actually 2500 calories. I'm not going to bump them up to 2500 calories tomorrow and expect them to maintain that for the next couple weeks or the foreseeable future, because their metabolism and their body's not going to respond pretty very well to that. We want to build them up slowly with just the biggest opportunities that we have to, say, support performance and energy and recovery. And then we go from there based on, you know, what their capacity looks like and everything else. Okay.
Let's make it tangible, because I think a lot of, you know, obviously there's a million different use cases for each of viewers listening to this podcast, but a lot of athletes follow quite a similar structure of Monday to Friday, we're quite time crunched. Saturday, Sunday, we can get a club run or a race in at the weekend. Monday, normally some sort of recovery ride or a day off. Friday, some sort of recovery ride or a day off. And maybe two of the 3 days, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, is a sort of interval set. Let's also suppose that somebody is quite sedentary and the days are quite predictable, Monday to Friday, where I'm getting up, I may be getting less than 5,000 steps in a day, and they're running errands out to the shop at lunchtime, picking up kids from school, those type things. But I'm quite sedentary across those 5 days. How do I start to approach the setup of my meals in those 5 days?
Yeah, so this really comes into play, and you can think about this big picture in that you don't need to change much on your baseline calorie needs as long as your efforts are about kind of below that 60 to 90 minute range and lower intensity. When we get into higher intensity for more than 60 minutes or any effort over 90 minutes, then that's when we're probably going to be adding additional calories on top of our baseline before the workout, during the workout, and even after the workout. So a good example here is, you know, like we have a lot of times probably athletes that are waking up early morning before they have to get the kids to school, get to work, all that kind of stuff. They're doing a trainer effort for maybe 60 minutes. That might be something where, hey, you know, if you're doing a trainer effort for 60 minutes and it's going to be, you know, pretty standard, not above lactate threshold, but just to get on the trainer and do some spinning, then you have typically some sort of small snack with some carbohydrate, a little bit of protein. It could be like a piece of whole grain toast with some nut butter, for example, on it. And then you do that effort just to make sure you're not doing that effort fasted. You finish the effort and then you have a breakfast within about an hour of finishing that effort. And then you go on with the rest of your day. You may have to insert an additional, you know, a morning snack to avoid getting to lunch and being really, really hungry, or you may be good. Depends on kind of where you're at. And then you go on with probably another snack and then dinner. However, as another example, if you were getting up and you were doing something that's a high intensity, say, you know, VO2 max effort or something like that, then I would say, okay, even if it's 60 minutes or anything over 90 minutes, we might want to add in a little bit additional carbohydrates to that post-workout breakfast to add some additional calories and to add some additional carbohydrates to then set you up for recovery from that effort, but also set you up for your next effort the next day, no matter what that is. So these are the little tweaks. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So I was wondering on that example, are you almost thinking of that Tuesday VO2 max effort? You're starting to think of that on a Monday evening, if it's an early morning session, and you're starting to add a little bit extra carbohydrate on your last meal on Monday morning to make sure you have the glycogen reserves to tackle that early Tuesday morning session.
Yeah, you definitely want to make sure that you're not, you know, this is something that sometimes happens, is that sometimes people will feel like they get hungry after dinner, especially if they've got a family and they're eating early, you know, say they're eating at 5:30 or 6, but they don't go to bed until 9:30 or 10 o'clock, but they have an early morning high intensity effort the next day on that Tuesday, right? Then I would want to make sure that they're preparing themselves with that dinner, but also, hey, do we need to insert some sort of snack between dinner and when you go to bed to set you up for that early morning workout so that you're not, you know, only able to show up 70% for that effort?
Yeah, that makes sense. So we're thinking about this session almost in a little bit of a vacuum. And when I say the session, I'm using that broadly. So we have our baseline calories. I'm talking Monday to Friday here. We have our baseline calorie expenditure, which we've determined for the day. We'll say it's 2,000 calories.
Yeah.
And then we're thinking about the session as the pre-session fuel, the during session fuel, and the after session fuel. That's almost siloed, and that's a separate fuel set and calorie need than the rest of the day. So we have 2,000, that is our distribution across the day. And then we have the requirements of the session in this separate silo.
Exactly. That's a great way to think about it.
When we're thinking about the 2,000 calories across the rest of the day, and we're looking to lose weight, we're looking to drop 4 or 5 kilograms. What do we need to think about here? What are our considerations? Are we looking at playing around with the macro distribution of those 2,000 calories? Are we looking to play around with the timing, or are we looking to shrink the 2,000 calories to maybe something more like 1,800?
MyWoosh is hands down the best virtual cycling app for home, and it's redefining indoor training at no cost. Yep, it's absolutely free. And setting up MyWoosh is really easy. Just download the MyWoosh app, connect your device like your Watt bike or your smart trainer, and off you go. Now, if you're feeling competitive, there's weekly races for every category from beginner to pro. Plus, there's insane prize money up for grabs. Now, if you've no plan to race, that's no problem. There's hundreds of free training plans and workouts that are designed to really push you to your limits. You can enjoy daily group rides and group workouts, and you can customize your avatar all without opening your wallet. So go on over to the MyWoosh app and have a look around. Why spend money on monthly subscriptions elsewhere when MyWoosh offers all of this for free? So join MyWoosh today. It's available on iOS, macOS, Google Play, Apple TV, or click on the link in the show notes to get started.
It can be a combination of all of those, really. So here are some of the things that I consider when we're looking at weight loss goals for people. We're number one, you know, always going back to, okay, let's make sure that you actually have enough calories to support your metabolism to continue to burn calories as fuel and energy. And then what we can do is we can skimp on the calories, and more, even more specifically, the calories from carbohydrates for the meals and the snacks that are the farthest away from your effort for the day. So if you're doing a morning effort, the morning is not your time. You know, your post-workout breakfast is not your time to skimp on calories, or especially on carbohydrates. Your time to potentially skimp on carbohydrates and calories is maybe your afternoon snack or maybe your dinner. However, like we were just saying, if you have a high intensity effort the next day, or if you have a long effort the next day, you may not be skimping on calories in your dinner. So the main ideas here is skimp on calories for the snacks and the meals that are the farthest away from your effort for the day. Be mindful of what you have coming up the next day and how you're setting yourself up for that. Focus on reducing a little bit of carbohydrates, and focus on, you know, hey, if we're cutting calories, we want to focus on those foods that are going to be providing satiety, where we're going to be able to cut, you know, maybe 200 calories or so, but not leave ourselves being hungry because we've cut that. So then we want to focus on the satiety inducing foods, which is proteins, fats, and fibers. Those are typically not the ones that we really want to be cutting overall. We want to be focusing more on, hey, can we cut carbohydrates without it negatively impacting our performance and our recovery?
Talk to me about the flawed logic of unsustainable dieting. An analogy I use is, if I'm saving for a mortgage, maybe it's good saving practice to save, you know, 10% of your weekly paycheck for your mortgage. That's good sustainable saving practice. But it's going to take you forever to save that deposit. A much better way to do it would be to live like a monk for 7 or 8 months, try and save 80% of your disposable cash, get to your target faster, buy the house, and then move back into a more sustainable saving pattern. Can we use the same logic with dieting?
Typically not, because our bodies, again, know how to adapt really well. And here's the thing, right? Like the way that I think about dieting is I always have to think about, well, how is our body going to respond to this? And how can we support our metabolism to continue to burn calories as fuel? The standard diet approach where it's, okay, I've got to lose, you know, whatever it might be. I've got to lose 10 pounds or whatever it is. I'm going to cut calories for the next 3 to 6 months. And I'm going to go on this really strict diet. I'm not going to eat out. I'm going to say no to happy hours with my friends. I'm going to exercise more. I'm going to just kind of be this person that doesn't enjoy food anymore and be really strict with it and eat the same thing for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, whatever that might be. That's not sustainable because it's enough to drive you crazy. It isolates you. Food is not just about calories, right? It's about the social experiences. It's about relationships. It's about having fun. It's about trying new things. So then it just becomes not sustainable. You hit your weight loss goal. Great. I was so quote unquote good for 6 months. I hit my weight loss goal. And then you slowly go back into what's realistic for your life. You go on trips, you go out with friends, you allow yourself to have bread again, whatever it might be. And your body's like, oh, awesome. I'm getting the calories I need more. Now I'm going to hold on to this. And I'm going to prepare myself better for when that deficit happens again. So I'm going to hold on to a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. And that's where this just extreme yo-yo happens with weight, but also just with life in general. So I like to see really slow, sustainable weight loss because slow weight loss tells me that it's more realistic and it's going to stick for the person because they're not having to completely do a pantry overhaul. They're not having to completely revamp their entire life. Their family's not like, what the heck are you doing over here making all your own meals, all that kind of stuff, right? Because eventually that's going to implode.
I get it. So if we're looking to lose weight, we're looking to make these shifts in our off-the-bike nutrition. We're not looking to underfuel during sessions.
Yes.
Is that fair?
Exactly.
So with that being said, is there a macronutrient distribution we should be looking for? Should we be looking to hit, you know, 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight? Is there a recommendation in each of those macronutrients that you would go and stick by?
You know, this is a hard thing to answer because it really depends on the person and where they are as their baseline. Some of the things I do think about is, yes, like getting some really good protein in with your first meal of the day is really, really important because that sets up your body and your metabolism for the rest of the day. So say as a baseline, like aiming for, depending on the person and their size, 25 to 35 grams of protein to start off breakfast in the morning can be a really, really helpful thing to set you up for the rest of the day. Some other things that I'm always looking at is, you know, what are we doing with snacking? So with snacking, it's not just like, hey, an apple or a banana is a great snack. It's like, how do we set up a snack so that it's actually going to provide you with some energy, but also some hunger prevention? So instead of just carbohydrates, even if it's a complex carb like a fruit or a vegetable, can we add some protein and some healthy fat to that to make it a complete snack that's going to give you hunger prevention in addition to a little bit of energy, you know, to get through that kind of standard afternoon slump that a lot of people have. And then what we're doing typically is we're sandwiching most of our carbohydrate intake around our workouts. And then we can be mindful of carbohydrate intake, focus on more complex carbohydrates for the meals and the snacks that are farther away from our workouts. And those are some good kind of more, pun intended, digestible ways to think about it.
You know, when I deconstruct this and I start trying to conceptualize what it looks like in reality, if I have a 2,000 calorie, just to keep my maths easy, 2,000 mm-hmm. calories that I'm looking to do each day, and then I stick with some principles that you're talking about, like I'm looking to hit a certain amount of protein, I'm looking to also stack my carbohydrates in and around my sessions, it actually starts getting... you start running out of options, not in a bad way, but it starts almost simplifying meal choices. Because if I think about breakfast and if I have 2,000 calories and I'm looking to distribute that over 3 meals, so I'm looking at maybe an 800 calorie breakfast, but I'm looking to eat 30 to 50 grams of protein in that meal. Well, it's like, okay, well, there's 2 eggs and 2 sausages already for breakfast. I'm probably up at around 600 calories, 500 calories, 600 calories for that already. So it doesn't leave me a lot of wiggle room to take in extra carbs there. So it starts making sense intuitively straight away where you're putting these puzzle pieces together and saying, well, actually, I don't have that much extra calories to play with here once I plug in my protein requirement into this meal.
Yeah. So, you know, I like to break this down per meal and per snack instead of looking at the goals at the end of the day in terms of this is how many grams of carbs you should have, this is how many grams of protein you should have, et cetera, even and this is how many calories you should have, because calories are one piece of the puzzle. Other pieces of the puzzle that matter more to us when we're working with our clients is, you know, if you're having two eggs and two pieces of sausage and then some carbohydrate on the side there, are you feeling like you're force feeding yourself and you're way too full after eating that? Because if you are, then, hey, we need to change that up no matter what the calories at the end of the day add up to. In the same way that if you're eating that and you're trying to lose weight, but then you're starving an hour later and you need to eat another snack, then we might be looking at, well, what do we need to do to that breakfast to add a bit more fiber? Do we need to add some more plants to that? Do we need to add, you know, we've got like maybe a healthy fat, some avocado to that. Do we need to add a piece of whole grain toast or whatever that might be? So I like to break it down and make it a little bit less complicated and more based on the individual at hand and how their body responds, their hunger, their satiety, their energy, their focus, their ability to show up for the day, no matter what the day brings. In addition to, yeah, paying attention a little bit to the calories at the end of the day, the goals, the macros, the percentages, the total grams of each macro, all that kind of stuff. But honestly, if that's all quote unquote perfect and meeting your needs, but you're still feeling hungry, or you're also on the other end of that feeling like, oh my gosh, I'm not enjoying food anymore because I'm sitting down and I have to eat this thing that's in front of me, and it's way too much food for me and what I'm used to, then it's not going to work.
Rob, man, I've got something exciting to share with you. It's been making a huge difference in my performance of late, especially when it comes to my sleep. Allow me to introduce you to Pillar. We're probably all familiar with the importance of electrolytes and carbohydrates in our race preparation. Pillar is taking a slightly different route. It's focusing on something called micronutrition, ensuring you're ready to perform even before you ever hit the start line. It's all about promoting a good night's sleep, facilitating effective recovery, and replenishing those crucial micronutrients so you can perform your best. Over the past month, I've been running a little experiment. I've been incorporating Pillar's triple magnesium supplement into my routine. I take it 30 minutes before bed every night, and I've seen a remarkable improvement in my sleep quality and my HRV. I'm tracking this every single night using my Whoop, and the results are there in black and white. I wake up feeling refreshed, having had a deep restorative sleep, and I'm ready to take on work, take on training, or whatever life throws at me the next day. But I want you to do something. Don't take my word for this. Let the data from your fitness tracker tell you the story. If you're ready to elevate your performance and elevate your sleep quality like me, why not give Pillar a try? Head on over to pillarperformance.shop and use the code ROADMAN on your local website to get 15% off your first order. If you're listening in the US, you can head on over to thefeed.com/pillar and use the code ROADMAN for the same 15% off your first order. Let's shift gear and talk about fueling requirements for training. Training, it's too broad a term to even, you know, ground that question. So let me even break that down and say, what's the fueling requirement differences from a midweek session, a 60 to 90 minute session versus a 4 hour endurance session? Let's assume the 60 to 90 minute session has some amount of intervals in it that are at threshold or above.
Okay. So 60 to 90 minutes is right at that area where we start to think about having to fuel during the effort. Typically, if the effort is less than 60 minutes, as long as we go into that with some fuel on board, we should be good for about 60 minutes. If it's low intensity, up to 90 minutes, we should be good. But with your example that you just gave there, Anthony, I would be thinking about, okay, how can I finish this effort as strong as I was, or as strong as possible, as close as possible to the strength that I had when I started the effort. So one of the big mistakes that I see people make with these 60 to 90 minute efforts is they do really, really good for the first two thirds of the effort. And then they're like, okay, I'm almost done. I don't need to fuel with anything. And then their performance just declines for the last third of the effort, right? What I would recommend there is, hey, experiment, see if you can have a little bit of fuel, even 100 calories or so, to set you up so that you can finish that effort feeling strong. Given it, having given it, you know, 100%. So that's what I think about for those efforts right around that 60 to 90 minute mark is don't forget and don't write off the fact that you can fuel. You probably, as long as you go into that well-fueled, not have to fuel until the final 30 minutes or 15 minutes of the effort. And it's not going to be a full, 200 to 300 calories. It's going to be, hey, maybe 50 or 100 calories just to get you through that final push.
And when you say calories, you're talking specifically about carbohydrates.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's a difference here when we're talking about the 4-hour efforts on the weekend, because when we get into efforts that are 3 hours or more, suddenly we're fueling for energy with carbohydrates. And we're also having to think about fueling for hunger prevention with small amounts of fats and proteins. So
what should I be eating on these rides then? The 4-hour endurance ride on a Saturday morning.
So you should be eating mostly carbohydrates. However, when you get into that 3+ hour mark, you might want to add like small amount of protein, like 5 grams of protein per hour is a good baseline to start with, just to test and see how your gut responds to prevent actually physically feeling hungry. So for example, it might be like you are eating 200 calories per hour of carbohydrates. You've got a carbohydrate goal. And then you might add in, okay, instead of having like a white bread or a white baked good, it might be, okay, I'm going to add a little bit of nut butter to a piece of whole grain bread with a little bit of honey on it. And I'm going to have a half of that over the cut up into, two little squares over the final hour of the effort to make sure that I'm not getting done with that effort and feeling like ravenous and wanting to eat everything in sight. Or whatever works for the person is totally fine. Some other options that I love is like a savory baked good that might have a little bit of protein in it. If it's got like, people love the a pancake that's wrapped in a piece of sausage. Like if you're making that for breakfast, pack that up for the final hour of your effort so you can get something sweet and savory.
So in these 4-hour endurance rides, so let's say it's a 10 a.m. start. I'm having breakfast at 9 a.m. and I'm rushing out the door. How early am I eating my carbohydrates? And then how many grams of carbohydrates am I taking per hour?
So you're looking at, if you're having breakfast, if you're having a complete breakfast, say with that example that you had of the eggs, the sausage, and then let's add some carbohydrate to that with some toast. We want to have that about 2 to 2.5 hours before the effort starts. The reason for this is because
I don't know if anyone's getting up that early.
Well, that's the thing too, is that good consideration here. If you don't have that amount of time, then you want to simplify your food. The more simple you can go is the idea there is that you focus more on carbohydrates and you cut out the protein and the fat. Because, there are some people absolutely that could eat those 2 pieces of sausage, the eggs, and the 2 pieces of whole grain toast, for example, an hour before the effort and their gut would be fine. Other people are like, nope, no way I can do that. So this is a very individual thing. It depends on the person. But if you have only an hour before the effort and you need to eat something, then you want to be mindful to skimp on the protein and the fat, because that's the slow digesting stuff that's going to sit in your gut for a longer period of time. And then you're going to focus more on the carbohydrate component of that meal. I would personally add, like some complex carbohydrates, like some berries, some sweet potato or something like that, where it's going to be some fiber as well for hunger prevention. A whole grain bread is another example, but not going overboard with, that 30 grams of protein meal an hour before the effort. So basically the idea there is that, based on the timing that you have, for these early morning efforts, if we're getting up and doing an effort before work or something like that, we're not going to have a complete breakfast right before, because that's not going to sit well. We're going to save that for after the effort.
Okay, so we have our breakfast, we jump on the bike. So we've had breakfast, say anywhere from 2.5 to an hour before, with those amendments that you suggested based on the time and you're having breakfast. How soon are we having carbohydrates on the endurance ride and how many grams?
So typically we're good for about the first hour, 45 to 60 minutes, we're good based on what we've had before. Then at the 45 to 60 minute mark, we start consuming the carbohydrates primarily. It depends on the person in terms of how many grams of carbohydrates per hour. Typically, we're looking at like 30 to 60, but let's just say we're at 50 grams of carbs per hour to keep it simple here. 50 grams of carbohydrates per hour after the first hour. And then the way that I think about this too is that you're not eating that complete 50 grams of carbohydrates at the top of every hour for every hour thereafter. That can cause problems with your GI system. That can make it more difficult to tolerate that bolus of 50 grams of carbohydrates at one time. What we want to do instead is we want to slow drip our fuel throughout the hour into, you know, as small as 15-minute increments. But hey, if you can do it in 30-minute increments two times throughout the hour, that's awesome too. Typically, it depends on kind of the pace of the ride and what your opportunities are to take your hands off the handlebars and actually consume fuel. But that's a really good thing for people to start to think about, especially if they're working on increasing their carbohydrate intake per hour, is, hey, can I do this into smaller increments, whether it's liquid calories in my bottle and or a combination of solid calories that I'm consuming?
Does hydration affect my ability to absorb carbohydrates at different rates?
Depends on if the hydration has electrolytes and carbohydrates in it, right? So it'll definitely contribute, you know, if you're doing something that has carbohydrates in it to your that hourly calorie goal, which is great. However, typically what I find is that people don't want to be consuming all of their carbohydrates from liquid, because that can be difficult for our body to digest as well.
I'm thinking more of somebody's underhydrated. So if they're going with your fueling strategy, you recommend it, but they're not drinking enough, say they're only getting through 150 mil per hour. Mm-hmm. Is that going to affect the absorption ability of those carbs?
Yeah, it definitely can.
And does that consideration change it based on if it's straight out water or if it's a mix of water and electrolytes?
The water and electrolytes will hydrate them more efficiently, even with a lower volume of fluid intake. So if they're having a hard time getting in enough, you know, enough of a volume of fluid every single hour, then I would say, okay, let's like slowly build you up to, you know, a baseline of, let's say, 500 mil per hour. But if you're at 150 mil per hour, then let's make sure that 150 mil, no matter what, is carbohydrates and not just water at all.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
There's a trend in World Tour at the moment where carbohydrate intake is just creeping up and up and up. And we're seeing World Tour riders taking in 120, 130, 140, even 150 grams of carbohydrates I've seen per hour in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
Is this desirable? And if so, how do we train our gastro tract to accept this level of carbohydrates? I tried it last year, trying 140 per hour on a training ride, and honestly, I felt like puke and I had to stop on the side of the road. I was like, this is disgusting.
Yeah, absolutely. I honestly like to see it. I like to see that there's a focus on carbohydrates, because this is coming from a history of these athletes just being so massively underfueled. And, you know, we're starting to see all these really amazing things happen with the results that people are getting by just focusing on more carbohydrates. And I think overall, people being more accepting of carbohydrates, which is a really, really neat thing to see. There is also a cap, and we don't need to just like, too much of a good thing is not going to be a good thing anymore. So I think that's important to pay attention to as well. Yes, you can train your gut in the same way that as athletes, we all train our cardiovascular system and our muscular system. So just because getting to that 140 or 150 grams per hour didn't work for you for a week doesn't mean that you can't get there in 6 weeks or 6 months, and it's going to be a slow build. However, not everyone needs that. And here's why. The goal is to replace 40 to 50% of the calories that we burn per hour with fuel, primarily carbohydrates. So if you are burning, say, 600 calories per hour, you don't need to be eating 500 calories per hour. So it's an interesting thing. You know, these people in the World Tour, like, they're burning a lot of calories per hour. And that's going to be different than a lot of people that are taking that information in and being like, oh man, if that person's doing it, that's how many grams of carbohydrates I need to be eating. So I think it's important for people to recognize where those recommendations are coming from and how they apply to, or if they apply to them, or if that's a different scenario. But I do love to see this you know, people are starting to embrace carbohydrates and realize that, like, yes, this is our primary source of fuel as endurance athletes. Let's go with this and make sure we're getting enough.
Rob, man, I know how serious you take your goal setting, whether they're fitness or life-related goals. If you're looking for a powerful ally to support you on this journey, look no further than Huel. Huel has become my secret weapon for when I don't have time to prepare a balanced meal. It ensures I get the nutrition I need without sacrificing time or taste. Plus, it stops me from reaching for that takeaway menu. I always throw a bottle into my backpack when I'm heading into the city to work, and it stops me eating junk convenience foods, snacking on croissants and bars of chocolate, because I know they don't support my training goals. It's a handy, nutritious meal on the go, and it's got over 22 grams of protein. Huel is perfect for athletes that don't have time to cook or prepare food before a training session. It's convenient, nutritious fuel at your fingertips, ensuring you hit your daily fueling needs for that session. Huel Ready to Drink has 26 essential vitamins and minerals in every single bottle. You're getting a whopping 175 health benefits. Plus, it's made from natural ingredients like tapioca, sunflower seed, coconut, and more. The best part? It's the flavors. There's 8 crazy beautiful flavors. Iced coffee is what's in my backpack right at the moment. You can get Huel directly to your home. All you got to do is head on over to the Huel website, huel.com/roadman. How do we figure out which system is fueling our efforts? Because obviously at a lower intensity, a higher amount of fat is utilized as a fuel source. Like, I find if I go out and do a 4-hour ride, and let's stick with your maths of burning 600 calories an hour, so that's 2400 calories. If I attempted to replace half of that, I'd just be absolutely stuffed. I just don't feel like I need that many calories at a 200 watt endurance ride. Is there a way of assessing efficiency levels or the distribution of carbohydrates from fuel? What fuel source is contributing to fueling this effort?
Yeah, that's a great question. So first off, it's never going to be only carbohydrates or only fat, right? There's always going to be a ratio of the two. The way that I like to think about this is above lactate threshold, that ratio is going to move a lot in favor of carbohydrates for fuel and much less fat as fuel. The low lactate threshold, we can burn a lot more fat for fuel because we have oxygen available to do that. That's what's needed to burn fat for fuel is oxygen. So below lactate threshold, when we have more of that available, we can burn more fat for fuel and less carbohydrate for fuel. And that's your times when, hey, you know, that probably means that you're burning more like 400 calories as opposed to 600 calories for your example there. And anyway, so you're probably more like, all right, I got to eat 200 calories during this part of the effort and then maybe get up to 400 calories during my hill climb part of the effort, my harder part of the effort. So that's another thing that can be really interesting to kind of navigate is, hey, if I'm going out on a 4-hour effort, it's probably not going to be below lactate threshold the entire time. I might have some bumps of time in there where I'm actually above lactate threshold and some other times where I'm below. So your calorie needs thus are not going to be the same, or and your calorie burn is not going to be the same every single hour. There's a variability here that we need to pay attention to and just be aware of too, that will help us understand how much to fuel.
Is there a case for fasted rides?
Not really, honestly. If you want to do fasted rides, the thing that I say is it needs to be less than an hour and it needs to be zone 2 or less. Nothing above zone 2. Beyond that, it's really not serving you. That's what we've found over and over again, and that's what more of the research is showing.
Let me debunk a few more of these myths here because I quite enjoyed that one.
Yeah.
Recovery drinks, are they effective? Do they work?
Recovery drinks are, it's about like you want to replace the carbohydrates that you need and a little bit of protein, right? So it can be a fancy recovery drink. It can be a mix. But typically the main thing here that we're looking for is 4 parts carbohydrate and 1 part protein for recovering from an endurance effort. So anything over about 90 minutes. That can also be something super simple, like I'm going to throw a frozen banana in the blender with about a cup of some sort of unsweetened milk, whether it's a cow's milk or any alternative milk. I'm going to put in 2 tablespoons of any kind of nut butter and maybe a tablespoon of cocoa powder if I like chocolate. that's also going to be the same. So it doesn't have to be...
4-to-1 ratio, I hear you on that, but how many grams of carbohydrates to how many grams of protein is that ratio breaking down as?
Yeah, so about 40 grams of carbohydrates and 10 grams of protein.
Okay, so throwing in one protein scoop is way too much protein. That's 20 grams of protein I'm throwing in the blender.
Yeah, and you know, it depends on... depends on what you've done. Like if that effort is maybe it's a long effort, like over 4 hours, you could do a little bit more protein and you'd probably actually want to do a little bit more carbohydrates as well. But yeah, you don't need, it doesn't need to be like three parts protein and 30 grams of protein and 40 grams of carbohydrates.
Should cyclists be taking creatine?
Ooh, that's a great question. Creatine is big out there today. Creatine is actually great. From the research that we've seen, there's a lot of benefits that creatine has beyond the, you know, just the old thoughts that creatine was for bodybuilders to support those, you know, bodybuilding muscles and quick bursts energy and all that kind of stuff. There's a really good podcast episode with Tactic Nutrition. It's Afternoon Snack, I believe, is the episode or is the name of the podcast. And they have one that's all about creatine. It talks about how creatine applies to endurance athletes. Now it talks about how creatine can support peri and postmenopausal women. And it talks about all sorts of different, really just impacts of creatine and benefits that creatine can have. The way that I see it is creatine is, you know, like, hey, try to take it, see how it feels. Go through a dose of creatine for a few months with your workouts. And then stop taking it and see if you notice a difference. It's not something that's going to be harmful or anything like that. So,
yeah, I've never seen any bad data on it. I've been taking 5 grams of creatine a day and I've noticed no difference. People maybe scaremongered a little bit when I started taking it, saying, oh, you're going to bloat out. But on that micro dose, I haven't noticed any difference in my body weight. Honestly, I haven't noticed any difference in my performance either. So
yeah.
I think it's the problem with these things I find is even I know you're saying, well, take it and don't take it and see how you feel. But maybe they work in controlled laboratory environments, but my life is so dynamic. You know, I've one good night's sleep, I've one bad night's sleep, had a Chinese takeaway last night. You know, you try and correct for all these variables.
Yeah.
It's difficult to observe the effectiveness of creatine.
It is. It definitely is. That's very fair to say, and that's exactly where I'm at with it. Is I'm doing the same exact thing that small dose that you're taking, and just focusing it around my workouts, and I'm going to go through a serving of it. I have the Thorin Research one, and I'm going to stop taking it and see if I notice a difference. But also noticing that I may not notice a difference at all. But yes, no negative impacts from it. So hey, like try it out and see, and some people will notice a difference probably, and some people may not, and then it's up to them to figure out what they want to do with it. I'm sure if they were to get into some lab testing and some specifics there, they would be able to see some differences there, but you know, not many of us are doing that.
I had Dr. David Lipman on the podcast and he had this interesting observation. He was looking at a meta-analysis of what makes cyclists successful. And he had a lovely turn of phrase. He said, our long-term outcomes, they're less affected by our ceiling and more affected by our floor. By that, he meant that it's not really our best week that actually matters over the course of a season. It's our worst week that matters. The worst week happens for most of us because we pick up an illness, because we pick up an injury. Is there anything we can do to make ourselves a little more robust from those seasonal illnesses?
I like to think about this, and I'm always talking to people about this, is like, yes, the low weeks, right? Like where we hit the floor, where life happens, where we get sick, where we just can't, you know, suddenly our training plan is out the window. What's the bare minimum baseline that you still need to maintain despite hitting the floor? You know, and this comes down to nutrition and, you know, okay, bare minimum baseline is that I'm not going to go more than however many hours. Typically it's about like 4 to 6 hours without eating. If you go more than that, you're setting yourself up for failure. So how can we make sure that you're still hitting your bare minimum baseline of eating every 3 to 4 hours? How can we make sure that you're eating good quality foods to support your energy, your well-being, your gut, everything else beyond that? And then also, what's your bare minimum baseline in terms of taking care of yourself, reducing stress? You know, do you do your mindset work every single day? When you hit your bare minimum baseline, self-care should increase. And the problem that a lot of us have is that when we have life happen, self-care is the first thing that goes out the window. But what if we can switch that around and recognize that, hey, when we're just struggling with life, we need to actually focus more and lean more into self-care. That's a huge, huge thing. And it all comes down to minimizing stress. You know, like when you're at that bare minimum baseline and you're on the floor, maybe it's turning your interval workout into just getting on the bike and spinning your pedals for a little bit and being present in the moment and enjoying yourself because you get to ride your bike today, rather than trying to put out a, you know, VO2 max effort. Or maybe it's, hey, I'm just going to eat the foods that I know are going to take care of me, that aren't going to cause me additional stress on top of this already stressful X, Y, and Z scenario that I'm in. Does that answer your question?
It's an interesting, it's an interesting answer, because I kind of almost expected you to say 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C or echinacea, yeah, or, you know, have, but it goes to this conversation. That's not you. That's not your philosophy on diet. There's no one panacea fix that's going to just cure everything. There's no silver bullet. So when you're finding yourself near this baseline and you know you're about to fall through the cracks, you know you're about to become susceptible to illness, the first thing you're looking to audit is stress levels, self-care, yes, and see, can you optimize those rather than turning to micronutrients to hit a heavy dose of that?
Yeah, I mean, that can work too. I mean, that can help too. That can be a part of the puzzle. But if you have all this like baseline stress going on and you're not taking care of your own needs, that is just going to be a band-aid solution. That's not really going to serve you in the way that it should be. What if we take care of ourselves first and the stress and the baseline stuff, and then we add that in? That's when it's going to be more beneficial.
I love that answer. You're not a fan of intermittent, you're not a fan of fasted riots. Does that also extend to mean you're not a fan of intermittent fasting protocols like 16-8?
I haven't seen it work for people that have come through my door. I've had people come through my door that are doing it. And I say, hey, you know, like, let's figure out if this is going to be the most beneficial thing for you. Let's test some things out and let's see. And every single time we've tested some different things out and we figured out that, like, hey, that's not the most beneficial thing for them. Especially, I will say, female athletes. Intermittent fasting for female athletes can have a lot more impact than it does for male athletes. So if it's going to work for anyone, typically what I see is, you know, there's going to be some level of fasting that may work for male athletes as opposed to female athletes. But again, my answer is always going to be, it's a very individual thing. And it just depends on what's going to fit into your life and what's going to be realistic for your schedule and all that kind of stuff. And also, hey, how is your hunger and your society responding and your performance responding when you are not fasting? And are you getting in the calories that you need to support your metabolism and your energy and your performance? And hey, if you are with fasting, then that may work, but it just becomes a lot more nuanced and you got to look at some details pretty specifically and just test some things out.
I suppose my pushback on it is, if we want to, you know, cellular autophagy is probably a conversation for a different day and we can park that. But if I wanted to push back on the theme of the podcast is around losing weight. And if we're looking to go from a 2000 calorie baseline for the day to an 1800 calorie baseline for the day, if I think about the distribution of 1800 calories over the course of a full day, that's a lot of restraint. That's a lot of missing out on stuff. But if I intermittent fast, and now I wake up and I just have some black coffees and I don't have my first meal till 2 o'clock and my last meal is going to be 8 o'clock. You know what? 1800 calories from 2 o'clock till 8 o'clock. That doesn't sound that bad.
Yeah, it doesn't sound that bad as long as you're not doing any of your workouts in the morning time and impacting your performance and your recovery.
So is there a case for it if you're working out in the evening?
From what I've seen, it just doesn't work for people long-term. Because not many people need 1800 calories, first of all. But second of all, we've got to look at just how this is going to impact their hunger and their satiety. And from what I've seen over and over again, it's just not, it's not enough time to get in the calories you need, especially when you've got an endurance athlete who has more significant calorie needs, even if their goal is weight loss. You know, we can be mindful about, hey, you know, what are you doing with your breakfast? What are you doing with your lunch? And by the time you get to 2 o'clock, if you want to kind of skimp on calories, but more so what happens is like, then we just be mindful of the macronutrient distribution of the meals that you are eating and the snacks that you are eating and the serving sizes. But we are typically eating from when we wake up in the morning to at least dinner time and sometimes beyond that, depending on what our day looked like and what the day next day looks like.
Is there anything trendy in nutrition that's exciting you at the moment? I know for a long time, cyclists have played around with bicarb loading to buffer lactate. Ketones seems to be one of the latest things. You know, I've used them and honestly found them a little bit pointless. Is there anything that excites you?
You know, not necessarily anything specific in terms of products or protocols or anything like that. I think that the thing that's exciting is that people are starting to recognize that there's a lot of value in learning more about their own needs when it comes to nutrition and recognizing that, hey, like, just because there's this fad going on, or this is what my training partner is doing, or this is what, you know, my biggest race competitor is doing. I think people are starting to recognize that there's an individual aspect to nutrition that's really, really valuable and starting to kind of hone in on more of that and figure out how to focus on themselves and understand themselves. And I like to see that. I also like to see people starting to use more foods that they're excited about when they're on the bike and when they're exercising. You know, it's starting to get away from more of just the sports nutrition products and those packaged things to like, hey, can I make this cookie work? Or can I go to this bakery and make this like baked good that gets me excited work? Because that is so cool to see when people are, we're looking at, hey, when we're exercising, especially for long durations and at high intensities, our appetite is suppressed. That's just how our body responds. So if our appetite is suppressed and we're not excited about what we have to pull out of our pocket to eat, it's pretty likely that we're probably not going to meet our calorie needs on an hourly basis. What if we can be super excited for what we have in our jersey pocket to pull out in an hour or in 30 minutes? It's much more likely that you're going to see your performance improve because you're going to be meeting your calorie goals per hour because, hey, that cookie looked really good and I'm super excited to bring it with me today. That's the kind of stuff I love to see. Yeah.
Chocolate Pop-Tarts. So I just want to finish the podcast with that.
Love it.
Go eat chocolate Pop-Tarts.
Let's leave it at that. There's your new inspiration.
Yuri, thank you very much. That was super helpful. I think a lot of people are going to benefit tremendously from this conversation. So thank you for being so kind and generous with your time and information.
Good. Thanks for having me. That was fun. I enjoyed it.
So if you like this video, you should definitely check out this video because I know you're going to love it. And don't forget to subscribe to the channel.